And welcome to Life Matters. Cassie McCullough with you this morning. Natasha Mitchell is on leave. Shortly, we're going to open the phone lines to hear your thoughts on what has been a week of heated debate about race in Australia. The booing of AFL star Adam Goods.
So the war cry from Adam here.
And the words of the Carlton fans, I fancy.
You know, the man is always a victim. Then he became Australian of the Year and tells us that we're all racists. Every time he speaks, Australia's a racist nation. I mean, there's 71 Indigenous players and people don't boo them.
We've got to look ourselves in the mirror here, guys. We've got to face our demons as Australians.
Rebecca, that is the most moronic statement. I am livid, livid that you would say that.
Well, we've heard from everyone, from sports stars to politicians. And now we want to hear from you. What do you make of this situation where the 2014 Australian of the Year is reported to be considering retirement because of the behaviour of crowds? The number 1300 225 576. That's 1300. Call RN. Now, if you're in South Australia or Northern Territory, call now, right now, if you want to add your voice to this discussion. You'll be able to just jump in right on the midpoint of this, what this strange situation we're going to be discussing today. So we want to hear from you, whatever your opinion is. 1300 225 576. Also, we'll hear from the AFL. From Charlie King. He's the ABC broadcaster that you might have seen on 7:30 last night, and a range of other voices, including some ideas from the advertising industry about how the AFL could turn this debate around. But first, this morning, we're going to talk rather appropriately about leadership. Now, we need good leaders in all walks of life, in business, politics, the community. But when it's a matter of life and death on the battlefield under fire, that's when you need good leadership most of all. John Cantwell is a retired Army Major General who served in two Gulf Wars as the commander of Australian forces in Afghanistan. He's distilled his ideas on leadership in a new book called Leadership in Action. This new book follows his first highly regarded and very emotional book about his war service and the legacy of post-traumatic stress disorder. John Cantwell, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks, Cassie. Good morning. I'm here. I can hear you.
Oh, good. Now, when you joined the Army, did you have the aim of rising right to the top where you got to?
No, I was a pretty dorky kid, you know, a country kid from Queensland. And I'd been in school cadets and those sorts of things. I just wanted a bit of adventure. And so the Army sounded like a good idea. And away I went. And to my great surprise, I loved the Army and the Army seemed to like me back. So it was a marriage made in heaven. And I really didn't expect to be spending all my adult life, almost 40 years, in uniform, which is how it turned out.
Well, it's given you a great insight into the nature of leadership, which is fundamentally different in the Army to other professions. The Army is, by definition, a top-down hierarchical organisation. Is that still true?
Look, I don't think it's entirely true, Cassie. It's a very reasonable position to take. Lots of people say, oh, well, it must be easy being a leader in the military. You just tell people what to do and they have to do it. Well, that's only true to an extent. We do instill into our people an ability to respond instantly to orders when those orders are necessary to be acted on, like, you know, in a combat situation, when safety matters, when lives are on the line. But you can't rely on that in day-to-day leadership. Leadership is leadership, whether you're in the military, whether you're working in a warehouse, in the community, in an academic setting or wherever else. You have to take people with you on the journey. You have to convince them that you've got something worth saying, you've got an idea that's worthy of their efforts, and then carry them along to bring those ideas to fruition. So leadership to me is very much a universal commodity, not just something that is structured around the way that we do things at times in the military.
You start this book by saying that leadership is a skill and anyone can learn it.
Yes.
But that good leaders are more than, you know, they don't just have a toolkit. They're actually authentic in the way they go about it. Yes. What do you mean by the word authentic there?
Look, to me, authenticity is the heart of all of this. There is so much fake leadership out there these days, shallow leadership, directionless in many ways, which is, a bit of a twist on how leadership should run. It's meant to be based on something fundamentally true and right. And my belief after many years of being led by great leaders and not so great leaders and having a chance to lead many others, It's come down to a couple of things. Honesty, high personal standards, a sense of inclusion, and doing the right thing, making the right decisions for the right reasons. That's what authenticity is about to me.
Mm. And you say that leaders need to have big ideas. Is that how you define an inspirational leader, someone who can motivate people with a big idea?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I really think that unless you've got something that is going to change the world, not necessarily, the whole world, but change your part of it. Make something better. Turn what is now, the norm into something that's improved in some way and have a big idea about how that's going to happen. Not some mad idea, something that can be brought into reality. And by bringing people along, getting them convinced. Big ideas is how we change things, make it better, and it's so important we start with that approach.
Mm. And you say that actually storytelling is a powerful way to do that, and that being able to communicate big ideas through a compelling story can be really effective. And you did this actually in frontline places in Afghanistan. Can you tell us about something that you might have said to the troops?
Yeah, look, you've got to have a compelling narrative. If you've got a big idea, if you care about your people, you're authentic, all those things are fantastic. But if you can't convince people, well, you might as well stay at home. So you've got to have a way of packaging this energy, this enthusiasm, this big idea, and have a narrative. The American corporate sector talks about it as the elevator pitch. If you've got 20 seconds in the elevator with your boss, what are you going to say about what you're doing? And that's the way I approached it. I had a story about why we were in Afghanistan. We were there to defeat the Taliban. I talked about what the role was of the soldiers and the sailors and the airmen, and I told them what I needed them to do to make it happen. And in that case, it was about letting the Afghans take the lead. And my sort of punchline was, we've got to get these Afghans in the front so that they have a chance to die for their country rather than you guys dying for their country. Not an original line, but a very powerful one, and it resonated because I could just pitch it short, sharp, and right between the eyes, and people remembered it. And it's a good way of having an approach. It also crystallizes your own thoughts about what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, giving people a reason to be doing something in the context in which you're operating. We're talking on Life Matters to John Cantwell. He's a retired Major General in the Australian Army. You might remember his earlier book, Exit Wounds, which was about post-traumatic stress disorder. He's now writing about leadership and using some of his battlefield strategies that might be useful for you in your job or in your life. John, the story needs to be concise, you say, and have an action plan. And this is where some leaders fall down. They're good at sort of outlining the problem, but not necessarily the solution.
Yes. I think, a product of the way that many of our leaders feel that the announcement is what matters, not the follow through. And the media cycle encourages that. We are all busy people these days. We want information in bite-sized pieces. And so it's a trap, an easy trap to fall into, to go, right, here's my idea. Ta-da. Well, what next, though? You have to follow through. You've got to have a real plan. And then it's that plan that people will deliver for you. And this is where the leadership thing comes in. Only the people that you influence, that who work for you, who you want to have respond to you, will make your big idea, your plan, your announcement actually happen. So you've got to lead those people. It's all about leadership. So many things that we do these days falls down because of weak leadership. The things that do well are based on, in almost every case, strong positive, inclusive, honest leadership. And we don't see enough of that, I don't think.
Mm. They say it's lonely at the top, making an unpopular decision or a decision that might have a bad outcome can leave you somewhat isolated. How do you recover from that as a leader?
Well, you have to live with it. You can't be everyone's friend. You just can't. I am a naturally friendly person. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I really love being around people. I genuinely wanted all of my people to do well, and I tried my best to keep them, you know, safe and make them the best people they could be. But at times, you can't just let that sort of desire to be a good person cloud your judgment. Sometimes you have to make decisions that not too many people like. And you've got to have a bit of courage then. You've got to say, look, this is my call. I've heard all your advice. I've heard all those opinions. I know this isn't going to be popular to everybody, but it's the right thing. And here's why it's right. Here's the reason. Not just because I'm saying so. Look at these facts. Look at these projections. Look at what I'm doing and saying. And follow me because I honestly believe it, and you should come with me on that journey. That's where the power of leadership can be really, really effective.
Mm. Yes, so acknowledge the emotion, but take the logic. Just finally, John Cantwell, from one leader to another, and that is Adam Goods, what would you say to the Sydney Swans player right now who's currently on indefinite leave after his non-stop campaign? He's a leader as well.
He is a leader, and I think we should all look up to Adam. Look, no one's going to come out of this looking particularly good. I think Adam may have made some comments that, on reflection, he could have put a different way. But at the heart, here is an amazing Australian who plays sport at a level that most of us couldn't even dream of doing, who has been so active in his community and more broadly to try to make us better understand, you know, the way in which our culture, our society has disadvantaged some people. Aboriginal communities are disadvantaged. No one can deny it. And I think Adam speaking out is absolutely right. It's a shame that it's become all mixed up and rather ugly. And the sort of crowd reactions, I'm disappointed to see that, but I understand it. You know, crowds are exciting things to be a part of, and generally they're a wonderful thing to be a part of. You cheer and you celebrate together and you share an emotion. Sometimes, though, we get carried away with that. And I guess I would really hope that people can just listen to their better angels. You know, ask yourself, if Adam Goods and his family was in your lounge room, would you say those things? Would you act like that? Of course you wouldn't. You'd respect him, and it'd be great to see us, all of us, just say, okay, look, none of us have perhaps played it as well as we would like. Let's move on. Let's acknowledge a wonderful Australian, an amazing sportsman from a rich cultural background, and also acknowledge that we as Australians, you know, sometimes we don't like to be maybe, prodded in ways that are uncomfortable. Maybe we should listen to that more often as well. None of us are blameless here, but I think we should just let Adam continue to do what he does so well, play wonderful football, lead. He's a leader. He has an idea and he's carrying others forward with it. And I'm just right behind him.
John Cantwell, thank you very much for talking with us and good luck with this book. I'm sure
thanks so much, Cassie.
A lot of people would follow you well into whatever danger was ahead.
That's thanks John, so much. Bye-bye.
John Cantwell, he's the Major General Army. He's a retired Major General in the Australian Army. He's the author of Exit Wounds. And his new book on leadership in action is published by Melbourne University Press. Now we're going to turn on Life Matters to we want to hear from you. So why don't you jump on the phone, 1300 225 576, 1300 225 576. Give us a call, especially if you're in South Australia or the Northern Territory right now. You've still got a chance to be part of the conversation. We're going to be talking about Adam Goods and the way that he has become the centre of a storm this week. Particularly, it's really about us, I think, and about our nation more than it is about him. How did it come to this? So let's hear a couple of different opinions before we talk to Charlie King, who's the presenter of ABC Grandstand in the Northern Territory and also the man behind No More, which is a campaign he began way back in 2008, actually, which is about putting a stop to violence and abuse within the family. It's been adopted by several of the football codes across the country. It's a great initiative. But let's hear firstly from Nova Peris. She was talking to Fran Kelly on Wednesday morning, and you can hear how emotional she is.
There are a significant amount of other Aboriginal athletes that aren't subjected to the constant mocking and the criticising, the booing and the hissing. But it's because Adam has spoken out. He has spoken out and he consistently speaks out because he's a proud Aboriginal man and he wants to speak about what's happened in the past, but also he's got answers on how we can move forward. It hurts, you know, it racism hurts.
Well, that's one opinion. That's Nova Peris from the Northern Territory. Here's Alan Jones on the subject.
I mean, people remember 2013 and they didn't like it. There was a 13-year-old girl in the stand. She was with her grandmother and her sisters. Her mother wasn't there. Her mother's a single pensioner from Gippsland and disabled. And she used a word about Adam Goode. She didn't even said later she didn't even know what it meant. She was just cheering for the other side. You know, the man is always a victim. Then he became Australian of the Year and tells us that we're all racists. Every time he speaks, Australia's a racist nation. I mean, there's 71 Indigenous players and people don't boo them. They're booing Adam Goode because they don't like him and they don't like his behaviour. They don't like the spear throwing and the running in and doing a war dance and so on and provoking people.
Provoking people. Well, that's one of the opinions, one of many that we've heard throughout the week. Charlie King, you're joining us now from the Northern Territory. What is going on in this country right now?
Well, I think, Cassie, it's nice to be on the program, I must say, but I think what's going on here is this issue around racism that's been just, you know, bubbling along there below the surface for a long time. And, you know, I don't want to bring it back personally to me, but I experienced this as a youngster, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And so it's always been there. It's not like it's new. And it's actually raised its head now. It's popped up and we can't walk away from it. This is a really important time for us to have a discussion about it. That's why I'm keen to join you on the program. Mm. I'm keen to hear the comments of other people and people who ring in, and I urge them to do that. We need to have a discussion around this. Can I make a comment about what Alan Jones said there, that there's this belief that a 13-year-old girl said something, and that this is what's inflamed Australians, is that Adam Goode's actually pointed her out. It's interesting to me to hear how quickly we can defend a young person like the 13-year-old for her actions, and then we can defend people like Eddie Maguire for comparing Adam Goode to King Kong and say, well, you know, he was only mucking around. And then we're quick to defend the crowd and say, look, it's not about footy. It's about footy. It's not about race. You know, all that. But nobody comes out and says, what about Adam Goode? I mean, what do we need to think about Adam Goode, you know? But when we're defending those people, as I said, what we're really doing there is just defending the right to be a racist without having a consequence or even owning up to the racism. And I think the first thing we have to do, we have to arrive at a point where we say some of these things are racist and they need to be addressed. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to move on for this. And I said before, this is a dangerous time for us. We have to get it right because the community, society is being split apart here and people are taking sides, and they both have the right to comment on it, and I look forward to hearing more discussion about it.
Mm, yeah, so you're saying this is really a watershed moment. Do you think it could be? Could it get worse before it gets better?
Cassie, it will. It'll get much worse. We've seen, let me say this, I mean, I travel around, I talk to Aboriginal people all over the place, and I have felt over the last few years that there's this real sense of frustration by Aboriginal people, mainly led by the young Aboriginal people who are starting, you know, they're the leaders of tomorrow. They're frustrated with what they're inheriting from elders. Like, what they're getting is worse than what the elders actually had. The opportunities aren't there. And then when you get something like this and this racist issue comes up, and then we chop down the tall poppy in Adam Goode, who's a hero to so many people, I worry that this undercurrent of frustration and anger in the Aboriginal community could bubble out. You imagine this for a moment. What happens if a couple of hot-headed young Aboriginal men decide to get so angry about this and they actually strike out and they attack somebody, a non-Indigenous person, and they harm that person. You know, heaven forbid, they kill somebody because of this. What will that do to our country? I mean, we know what happens when you have this racial divide and this racial tension and then racial war, if you like, that comes out of it. We've seen it in America. Young people see that on their televisions now. They see it in the newspapers. They hear commentary on it. They know what it is. And I worry that this has the potential to escalate to that, not now, but in the future. That's how important it is, in my opinion, and to lots of Aboriginal people that I've been speaking to. We've got to deal with this and have a discussion, a sensible discussion about it, so that we don't finish up like some of those countries overseas where you see this horrible racial tension and violence that happens in this, burning cars, hurting each other. That's not for this country. Now's the moment for us to start having a discussion to make sure that we don't go down that road.
A tinderbox moment. Is this what you're... Right. Well, let's open the phone lines. 1300 225 576. Do you agree with Charlie that this is a moment where we need to make a stand? Do you see that the stakes are this high? Let's go first to Denise in Brisbane. Welcome, Denise.
Hi, thank you. I'm from South Africa a very long time ago. I know a lot about racism. I've seen it in my own family. If you're white, you just have no idea. You have no idea. You cannot have any idea. I think absolutely we all have to make a stand. This is no different to xenophobia or domestic violence. Crowds can be incredibly ugly. They can be very dangerous very quickly.
How could we make a stand?
Okay. We all need to speak out. If we feel this is a very wrong thing to do, and going back to the early interviews with John Cowley about leadership, we all need to be leaders here. You know, leadership implies followership. We can all be leaders here. We can say, that's not on, and I'm going to speak out. Just like the people on the buses who say, don't vilify this person because they may be Islamic. You know, this is so critical to the health of the society of Australia. It's just not funny anymore. And one thing we can do very easily is to actually make some kind of gesture silently. You can wear a T-shirt. You can speak out when someone is doing. But if you're actually in the crowd, you could do something like begin to clap very loudly when the other people are booing.
Mm.
Or you could make a voluble noise, like someone suggested, baa, like a sheep. I'm not sure about that because I think it might ramp up the volubility, you know, because crowds can be very ugly very quickly.
All right.
But we absolutely need to make a stand. This is so critical and we have to speak out. So please, everybody out there,
thanks, Denise.
Say something.
Yep. Thanks, Denise. What do you think about that, Charlie? I imagine being in a crowd while others are booing and you take a separate action, that could actually be quite scary.
Yeah, but, you know, on the booing issue, while those who support, you know, the booing of Adam Goods, while they are championing free speech, you know, the right to boo, what they're really trying to do is silence Adam Goods and anyone else who wants to name racism for what it is. You see, that's how complex this whole thing is. That's a terrific call from Denise, you know. She would know. She knows where this will end up. That's where we are at this point. We've got to do something. And if making a noise in the crowd when the booing starts to try and stop it, let's do it. And she said, you know, wear a T-shirt, do something, but let the message be loud and clear. In this country, we do not want to go down that road at any chance. You know, we just do not want that to happen.
Jan from Castlemaine, you believe this has a long history in, particularly in AFL.
Yes. The first time this mass booing of an Aboriginal on the field took place was the first ever night game at the MCG in 1985. It was Collingwood versus North Melbourne, and the Cracker Brothers were on the ground, and at the time one of the Crackers was facing a criminal charge. Whenever either brother went near the ball, I was there, a mass of Collingwood supporters booed them, and it lasted, to my memory, for the entire game. It went absolutely unremarked upon in the media at the time.
Mm. Perhaps that's one encouraging aspect. Perhaps the nature of this kind of behaviour isn't new, but the way we're responding to it is. Thanks very much for that, Jan. I'm going to go to Mike in Queensland. You have an idea about the captain of the opposition team taking some action.
Well, I do. Of course, hopefully we won't hear Alan Jones on Radio National again. Please, let's not do that to us. But, I mean, the answer, I'm quite surprised that no one has come up for the most obvious answer that's staring us all in the face. Not one prime minister, leader of the AFL, no one's come up with the answer, and it's staring us in the face, and it's got nothing to do with words, it's all about action. The mob mentality has taken over. So what we need to do is to get the opposition captain, so in the case of if Adam Goods plays next week against Geelong, Joel Selwood, the opposing captain, grabs hold of the microphone before the match and he clearly articulates that if anyone boos Adam Goods when he has the ball, we will be stopping the game and handing the ball to the opposition team, Sydney. I can tell you right now, it would only happen once and all those in the crowd would look to the person next to them when Adam got the ball and if they uttered a resemblance of a boo, they would say, shh, straight away and it would end immediately. Absolutely, 100% no problem. Look what happened at Wimbledon when we had our so-called favourite fans over there at the centre court. There was about a dozen of them at centre court screaming out, standing up at Wimbledon when one of the Australian players were playing. The whole crowd said, shh. And you know what? They didn't do it again because they could see that everyone wanted them to stop.
Mm. Well, Charlie King, that's interesting. Do you think that you can actually change a crowd's behaviour? Look at what happens in the round ball game, soccer, overseas in some countries. It just feels like once the horse has bolted, it's unstoppable.
Yeah, people will argue their right that, you know, they bought a ticket and that gives them the right to do what they want. They won't be told what they should do. But Mike's comment and Mike's suggestion certainly has some you know, something worth considering, I reckon. I'm not sure whether the threat of handing the ball over to the other team would work. But if the captain of the opposition said, you know, we want a game of footy, we want to play it where we're respectful of each other, we respect the opposition, they respect us, let's enjoy footy war for what it is, this great game of sport, you know. If a captain were to say, or on a ground announcement were to say something like that, you know, that might work, you know. I think we have to try and consider everything. So good on you, Mike.
Mm. We're talking on Life Matters about the discussion that's raged in Australia this week about, well, centering on Adam Goods, but it's not, let's not put it all on his shoulders. It's actually about something far broader and a lot of very confusing positions have been held by different people. David in Brisbane, you love seeing the haka, what the All Blacks do. How does this fit into the debate around, the war dance?
Well, the first time I saw the haka, it was very confronting and almost a scary thing. It's almost like we're being attacked here. But, of course, like most people, I've grown to love it and think this is a brilliant and really proud expression of their solidarity, their cultural connections, and a lot of the people doing it aren't Maoris. Similarly, when I first saw Adam Good do this dance, I thought, oh, that's a bit confronting. And I thought, yeah, it's just what we need, something that's culturally significant, that I'd love to see the rest of the team, and in fact, even Australian teams in general, take this up as something Australian. So much more interesting a cultural identity thing than meat pies. apart from that, I absolutely hate seeing the racism. It's disgusting. It makes me feel like turning off the TV.
Yes, can I comment, Charlie.
On
yes,
that, Cassie. Yeah, good on you, David. That's a good call, and it's a strong point. The haka, and I've been over in New Zealand and watched the rugby over there, and they do the haka, and I've seen them with the pretend knife to cut their own throat. It's not a knife. I mean, it's just a thing they're doing. Nobody seems to have any problem with that. When Adam Goods throws what is not even a spear, but the spear throwing action, then that, as people like the person who we don't want to hear on Radio National speaking earlier on, like, that is the worst possible thing he can do. What, this challenging behaviour with this pretend spear is so offensive to Australians sitting in the crowd. Go to the haka and you see them do the throat slitting. Some people don't like it, but there's no knife involved and there's no spear involved. It's just part of what the dance is all about. But David's got a good point. I mean, you look at the haka, that's a great thing. I'm proud of them. I was in Kuala Lumpur to watch the Commonwealth Games, in fact, when Nova Peris won her medals over there. And the teams that came out the start of the, you know, marched out onto the field at the start at the Booker Charles Stadium, they all did their dance, you know. The Australians, we just walked out, you know, we don't have a dance. We need to have a dance that says we're Australians, you know. So maybe it's not what Adam Goods does, but maybe we need to be talking about that as well. Let's have a dance that unites us all, not one that separates us.
On RN, this is Life Matters, and we're talking about how the AFL can reclaim the game and turn this ugly situation around. Jump on the phone and tell us your thoughts. 1300 225 576, 1300 call RN. And of course, if you're listening in Western Australia, you can jump on the listener line, leave us a message there. 02 833 1430, 02 833 1430. I want to bring in Aaron Clark now. He's the Indigenous Program Manager for AFL in Victoria. Now, thank you very much for coming on, Aaron, and representing the AFL. What are you hearing here, and how do you respond to it?
I'm hearing many... thanks for having us on the show, firstly. Great to have some Aboriginal representation on Charlie, the great Charlie King from the Northern Territory. Hello, Charlie.
Mm. Hello, Aaron. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, look, I think it's been certainly a great conversation to start. I think it's something that we've obviously undertaken many times in the AFL. And I was only speaking the other day, it's been 20 years since the racial vilification rule has been brought into place. And Michael Long and many others, Nicky Wimmer and the like, took a major stand back then. People at the time were actually saying that Michael Long should toughen up. People were saying that, you know, it's part of the game. There was a number of commentary around it. And 20 years on, why that positive action that the AFL took was actually a leader at the time. What we've seen since is now up to, you know, 70 Aboriginal players on AFL lists. At the time, there was only 5. So positive action and policy can have an ongoing benefit, not only for the game of AFL itself, but for the people of Australia in terms of its sporting arena. So I think this moment, what we're going through now, we'll look back and reflect upon it as a pretty significant time in the journey of not only sport, but in terms of race relations in Australia.
There's been a lot of debate about the definition of racism in this situation. How does the AFL see it? Is this racism?
I think you'll see a number of commentary where certainly there's been a number of the club CEOs, the captains and even coaches of the football clubs pretty outly sort of classify this as a form of discrimination. There's no doubt that there's a number of ignorance at play here. There's no doubt that there's motivations of racist behaviour behind the booing, and that's certainly taken very, very seriously. You know, I think there's a comment by one of the coaches, Damien Harwork, earlier in the week saying that, you know, at best it's bullying and at its worst it's racism. And I think that was a fantastic quote because at minimum, you know, this bullying behaviour and this sort of pack mentality can have some disastrous effects on a number of people. And I'm sort of looking back, and I deal with a lot of young Aboriginal boys in my program, and it's been quite saddening over the week to see, you know, 14, 15-year-old Aboriginal boys having to defend their Aboriginality and themselves on social media and Facebook and these type of platforms when they're really not that skilled to have the debates. They're just acting off pure defensive mechanisms to, you know, stand up for who they are and their place within society, and they're copping an absolute hammering. And that's where this thing has a broader effect on real people, on our young people, and the families involved.
Charlie King, AFL is really the sport of choice of much of the Indigenous community. Do you think this will have an effect?
Indeed, and the great points there raised by Aaron. I mean, the 13-year-old girl is actually dragged into this argument so often by commentators who support the idea that this is not racist. But what Aaron is talking about there and what I've seen myself is when you chop down a hero like Adam Goods, you actually are chopping down Aboriginal people right around Australia who have great, you know, great respect for Adam Goods. These are the young Aboriginal people that are coming up, you know, the 13 and 14-year-old boys that Aaron are talking about, hold Adam Goods in the highest regard. You know, this is a champion of his people. And so what they're now seeing and what they've seen over the, you know, the last short while is just disgraceful. I mean, we pick out the tall poppy who's doing great things for Aboriginal people and we want to chop him down, and the effect of that on these young people, what does it say to them, you know? Like, don't go and do this because this is what's waiting for you. They're the things we have to consider in the discussion, I think, and I agree with what Aaron's talking about there, absolutely.
Mm, and Aaron, you're involved in actually day-to-day training, I understand, of players.
Yeah, we run a number of developmental programs, Kickstart programs, probably the highlight of that. We have about 300 boys in our Kickstart program we see regularly throughout the year. And what we're finding, you know, I think across society is a dramatic increase in bullying and the mental health issues associated with that. And certainly these mental health issues are translating into suicide. Unfortunately, you know, Aboriginal populations have the highest cases of suicide in the world. They can attribute, you know, up to 80% of those suicides back to some form of discrimination or racial discrimination. So we've got a serious issue in this country, and our programs, we do our best to provide, I suppose, a broader support with other peer networks, but also a number of sort of role models of people that have been through that. And what we've found is that a cultural strengthening. So the war dance that we created and was developed by the AFL was all about being proud around your culture. It was all about connecting. It was about reaffirming who you are. You know, we do a dance on the ground at football itself. The game of Marangook has been a game Aboriginal people have played for thousands of years in this country. You know, to do a dance is something that's a part of our culture. And for that to be on the big ground, you know, on the big arenas, I think that's enriching Australia's culture. And people should be embracing of it. And I'd love to see, there's been discussion certainly, about AFL teams actually doing the war dance. And many years ago, you know, the NRL side, I think there's been a push there. They used to do it consistently when they played internationally, have a form of war dance, which is an Aboriginal dance. And I think we've got a long way to go, but I think there's an opportunity that can come from this as well.
Mm.
Now, Charlie, I know that you have to go because...
Oh, no, I'm so enthralled in the discussion,
oh, yeah,
and listening to people like Aaron. I can hang on for another 20 minutes, I know that.
All right, good. I know that your time is very much under demand. I want to bring in here Dr. Sean Gorman. He's a research fellow for the Centre for Aboriginal Studies at Curtin University. But first, just a couple more of your calls. To Melbourne and Lana, you'd like to see all the players doing this dance. Tell us how you think that might work.
Well, it just feels like what's happening is affecting Adam Goods, and he's it's hard to stand up to that on your own, that kind of booing and all of that. It's really hard. So you need your friends. So what I imagine is the whole team doing the dance together with him. And in fact, maybe even the opposing team, the team that they're playing, joining in. I just feel that would be so inspiring for both Adam and maybe it would just stop what's happening in the crowd.
Mm. Mm. All right.
Can I just comment on that? I mean, I've called for this. What I would really like to see is a non-Indigenous player, whoever it is, can be any individual from any team, and this week's round of AFL matches, when he does something that he's proud of, to do the dance. So that this dance then belongs to everybody. It's not just Adam Goods, and you can't point your finger at Adam Goods. You know why? Because we cross that line and we go to where non-Indigenous people are, and they are saying, yes, we agree with what Adam Goods is doing. Only takes one person to do it. And you're absolutely right, Lana. I'm with you with that, and I've been calling for that as well.
But can you really imagine the players doing that? I mean, the haka, which we've discussed already, is very much part of New Zealand culture, and kids grow up at school learning to do it, and it's very powerful. But here to adopt it, I'm not sure that I can really see it being done.
Well, I'm talking about an individual doing it, Lana and Cassie. I'm talking about an individual doing it. Like if someone kicks a goal in footy, they run from all points of the compass. They throw their arms around each other. There's all this that goes on. Why not instead of that? You've done something that's really great. That person just does the dance. That's all you've got to do. It takes the fire out of the argument. I'm not suggesting that the whole team come out and do it standing out on the ground. Maybe that's where it will go to. But if one person does it, I think that takes the fire out of the argument.
Okay. What about you, Fiona? You're calling us from Melbourne. You believe that the AFL isn't taking a stand with the crowd.
Oh, yes. Good morning. Thank you for your program and thank you for the discussion. I've been speaking to some people this week who've just been so disgusted with what's been happening by the crowd towards Adam Goods, and just so disappointed the lack of response from the AFL. And I think it was even this morning, Gillon McLachlan came out and said that the AFL can't tell their crowds how to behave. And I don't agree with that. I think the AFL could come out very clearly. Gillon McLachlan could just say, this does not represent us. We don't accept this. We won't allow it. And we'll eject fans from the crowd, from the ground, and from our memberships of clubs if they participate with this, because they expect us to say something about it. If people are, if the crowds are abusive, they expect the individuals to report it. And yet, as I understand it, when a woman in WA did report this, she was left to feel so uncomfortable that she ended up having to move or leave the game. And so it will end up being that anyone who's not part of this mob will no longer feel welcome at the AFL games. And if that's what the AFL want to represent them, then that's what's going to happen if they don't come out and say something more strongly against it.
I do understand the AFL has spoken this morning, Gillam, as you're saying, and also that they've been flying the Aboriginal flag above their headquarters this week as well. Let's talk to Dr. Sean Gorman. Now, g'day, Sean. You're from Curtin University and you're involved in the Centre for Aboriginal Studies. How do you believe this crowd behaviour emerged and can it be changed?
Oh, that's a big question, Cathy. How did it emerge? Well, we can probably go right back to not just the young 13-year-old girl. I believe it's when Adam Goods made a simple invitation towards Australia and its citizens to say, go along and watch John Pilger's documentary, Utopia. And then we, in terms of dealing with our racist past, and I saw Alan Jones come out sometime this week to say that he came out and he called us all racist. Well, he didn't at all. He actually came out, invited people to go and see a simple documentary which looks at issues around Aboriginal alienation and disenfranchisement. And basically that's when the booing really started to take off in leaps and bounds. And okay. what we saw on the weekend was the end point to that position.
So you're saying it's not his Aboriginality that's the issue, it's that he talks about it and that he talks about it in a full-on, unapologetic way.
No, it is his Aboriginality, absolutely. How can he can't, step outside of himself. He can't sort of not be who he is in terms of his Aboriginality. I'm not saying that at all. He's a very much a very proud Aboriginal man, and having been able to sit down and talk with Adam on numerous occasions about his Aboriginality and his identity, he uses that very much as a platform, but he also uses his agency as a footballer to try and, work that into something positive. So it's an interesting situation that he's in, and it's just come back, tenfold to sort of really kick him in the bum. And it's such a sad situation to see an ornament to the game being taken down by the right-wing media in this country and by people who really don't understand what it is that he's talking about, simply because they don't pick up books and read things about Aboriginal history, culture and people.
There is actually a very interesting retelling of the sequence of events that surrounded Adam Goods's pointing out of that 13-year-old girl in the crowd two years ago. In the Australian Today, Chip LeGrand has sort of outlined, he was there, he writes a very clear, concise, timeline of what happened on that day and then following with the press conference that Adam Goods made and the contact contact that he had with the 13-year-old girl who said that she apologised and that he told her how it made him feel. And she later wrote him a letter saying that it was good to talk to him on the phone and she was sorry for being a racist and she didn't mean any harm and now she'll think twice before she speaks. I mean, really, that's where it should have ended, I imagine, that incident, Charlie King.
Yeah, well, it should have ended there, but I think the war dance actually reignited it again. But I don't think people have forgiven Adam Goodes for rising above his station. He is not. I mean, he's not the footballer only. You know, he's not the grateful poster boy Aboriginal player that that people want him to be. He's more than that. He's much more than that. He's standing up for who he is. He's not a Tuesday Aboriginal person. He's a every minute of his life Aboriginal person, you know. So he stands up for that as many other Aboriginal people do. And you know what, can I say, Cassie, we lack great leaders in this country, Aboriginal people. We need many more great leaders. I see Adam Goodes as a great leader for Aboriginal causes, as I do Noel Pearson and Professor Marcia Langton. These people are great people for the Aboriginal cause. They shouldn't be shot down, you know. They shouldn't be driven down. They should be listened to, and they'll help us be a better country.
Mm. In a moment, we'll hear from Erin Doyle. She's canvassed the opinions of the advertising industry on how actually behaviour change can be affected, perhaps led by the AFL, perhaps led by us as just individual citizens. But first, let's go to Lynn in Canberra. G'day, Lynn.
Hi, Cathy.
Now, what did you see when you went to a game?
I didn't go to a game. I went to Sydney to visit a boyfriend, and we went to a club there for lunch, and in walked the Victoria's team of rugby players, and they had a blow-up gorilla. And I said to my friend, "That's a great mascot," and he said, "Oh, it's not a mascot, it represents their star player." And in walked this Aborigine who was being patted on the back, and he was smiling indulgently, but I was appalled. And I said to my friend, "You know, you look more like a gorilla than he does." And he took stock and he thought, you know, because he was laughing. And then he realised that it wasn't funny. And I think if people don't speak up, you know, it just perpetuates this whole sense of, you know, let's just laugh at everybody. And it's very racist.
Yeah, there is that feeling of if everyone's laughing, it's okay. Thanks for that, Lynn. Rosemary in Glebe, you've got an idea about how people can show support.
Hi. Yes, I can. Whenever I go out, or most times I go out, I wear an Aboriginal scarf. Very obvious. It's red, black, and yellow with Aboriginal signs on it. And to me, I say nothing, but everybody knows I'm supportive of Aboriginal people. Now, I think when people go off to a football match, off to a cricket match, anywhere, just out the door, put on a badge, a flag, anything which just simply says, I support Aboriginal people, no matter what they do, and what they play.
That's a strong statement. Now, thank you very much, Rosemary. Erin Doyle, now you're a reporter for the B&T magazine, which is a media marketing and advertising publication. And you went this week to some leaders in your industry to find out how they would approach the situation. Tell us what you found out.
Yeah, so I was able to talk to an ideas director and a crisis management expert about their opinion about what the AFL and Adam Goodes could do to kind of flip this conversation into a positive. And the ideas director, Jonathan Pease from digital agency Tongue, he came up with such a brilliant, simple, cheeky idea, which the idea was to turn a boo into a boom. So the Sydney Swans supporters and anyone who disagrees with booing simply as an M.
So as the boo starts up, it gets sort of transformed into a boom.
It's transformed into something that's positive, and you know, it kind of reminds you of those classic kind of superhero wham, bam, boom,
pow.
Yeah, that kind of. And it just flips such a negative idea into such a positive one. And I thought it was just a fantastic idea, because not only does it take the power out of boo, it's so simple. It's so simple to do for any of the supporters and anyone who doesn't like booing. And you can make it... Jonathan had a fantastic kind of social media marketing strategy behind it, because I think, as we're seeing, this is something that social media has exploded over, and it's really quite massive in social media and people discussing on Twitter and Facebook their opinions.
Well, this is something that another person you spoke to, Noel Turnbull, a professor of media at RMIT, he said Adam Goods doesn't need saving as such. It's actually the brands, AFL and the sports and political leaders who are in trouble with their brand damage over this.
Yeah, and that was quite a common theme throughout the people that I was talking to, that the it's not Adam Goods as a brand that is damaged, it's the AFL as a brand. You know, the AFL has this opportunity, to stand up and make a statement, and people are understanding that that's not happening, and they feel like that's not happening.
Yeah, Charlie King, you may not like hearing the idea of Adam Goods as a brand. that's probably not the right terminology for a sports person, but do you think the AFL is suffering brand damage here, or do you think that actually maybe they're sort of happy to be a little bit ambivalent about the situation?
They've dealt with these sorts of problems before, and, you know, we heard that 20 years ago with the racial vilification thing. I mean, the AFL will come up with a way to deal with this. I'm disappointed to hear that, and I didn't hear the comment, but as was reported here on this program, that Gillon McLachlan said that, you know, we can't tell our fans what to do. I think the AFL can. They don't have to tell people exactly what they can and can't do, but they can make ground announcements at all the grounds and say, you know, we just remind you to be respectful of both teams, support your team in the best way possible, make as much noise as you want, but be respectful of the opposition as well. I think that's where it starts, and I think the AFL can do that sort of thing, and they'll arrive at that and have a discussion around those sorts of things, I think, because they have fixed up difficult problems in the past, and I'm fairly confident they'll come up with something, but I keep waiting to hear it, and I haven't heard it yet.
Dr. Sean Gorman, we heard Charlie King saying earlier that he feels that this is a really dangerous point for Australian society. Oh, sorry, Aaron Clark, I mean. I thought I was talking to Sean Gorman. I was talking to Aaron Clark, the Indigenous Programs Manager for AFL Victoria. Do you think that this is, as Charlie King says, a really watershed moment for us?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, football is certainly a reflection of what's taking place in society. And unfortunately, you know, the game only lasts, you know, 2 hours. And what happens during that time is there's certain controllables within it, and crowd behaviour is something that the AFL are proactively endeavouring to rectify. But there's a number of difficulties because people bring their broader attitudes. And I'd like to reflect back to the young 13-year-old girl. You know, she's a product of her environment. And what she's learnt and the things she's picked up and what she displayed that night was not learnt at the football, it was learnt elsewhere. She brought that to the football. And I think that just on reflection with that, Adam Goods actually put his arms around that young girl and supported her and said that she needs as much support as anyone here. And his care and thought, his frustration was, where did she pick this up from? Where did she gain these views? Where did she learn that she didn't know that these were defamatory type of comments? This is the type of commentary that took place afterwards, and I think I'd implore anyone to go back and look at the press conference and to listen carefully what Adam said and his care for that young 13-year-old girl. Certainly is quite an interesting thing to take in place. So I think a lot of people have taken that out of context.
In regards
to the crowds, you know, it's something that you've just got to be a reasonable person. But there's a number of adults and children out at the football, and I know there are cases where, you know, I haven't taken my children to certain sporting events and football arenas because of the environments that are there. But their environments are products of the society of which we live.
That's true. Now, we're rapidly running out of time. Just extremely briefly to Chris in Melbourne. Chris, your thoughts?
My thoughts? I think Charlie King put it on perfectly. He shouldn't rise above his station. I think it's more so about class. Racism is a subclass of class. And we're supposedly a classless society, but when you look at it, you know, don't rise above that level. You do. You stick your head up, and there are going to be problems. Know your position. Know where you belong. As soon as you stand up above that, that's where it's the problem. And we belong to, you know, we want to belong. And when we want to belong, we can either accept people or we can use it to divide people. And that's the problem.
What a note to finish on. Charlie King, do you think that what we're hearing from so many of our listeners today is heartening to ears around the nation? And is there a reason to believe this is the beginning of a much more important conversation?
Absolutely. And I'm just buoyed by what I'm hearing from listeners here. I was expecting to hear a much stronger view from the other side, if you like, and to hear the great comments that have come through suggest to me that Australians want to do something about this, and we all need to do it. And if I can finish on just one comment here, if I can, Cassie, why is it, to think about this, why is it that when Adam Goods experiences and names the taunts as racist, that we can't respect that and then go on and do something about it? Why is it that we can't accept that?
Why,
I don't understand why we can't.
It's the beginning of a conversation, I feel, and one that we'll be having for some time, because this isn't going away and we have to find out about what happens with Adam Goods and his career. Thanks to everyone for being part of this conversation. It's been most fascinating. Thanks to Charlie King and to you. I'm Cassie McCullough. This is Life Matters. See you next time.